Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And welcome, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Western Idaho. Our AccuWindow forecast tonight, it's actually quite pleasant, about 78 degrees, light breeze out of the west. The solar wind tonight is up a little, 256.3 kilometers per second, and the proton count is way down to 1.9. Those of you who get up early in the America, please be sure to look east tomorrow morning. Set your alarm for dawn. On Monday morning, Venus and the crescent moon will gather in the eastern sky for a beautiful close encounter. You should be able to see it for a couple mornings, but tomorrow it's really going to be dramatic. So have a look. The number of earthquakes in the world is, and we try to keep track of these each week for you now, the number of earthquakes, 2.5 or greater on the Richter scale in the last 24 hours was 36. This is up 50% from last Sunday. There was a 6.7 occurring in India just a few hours ago. 12 shook the earth at a 5.0 on the Richter scale and have happened in the last 2 hours. Also, be sure to look to the southwest tomorrow morning right after you look at Jupiter and or Venus and the moon in the morning, because you're going to see the space station come over, and it will be brighter than Jupiter. And if you haven't seen it, go overhead, look up tomorrow. You won't be able to miss it, believe me. It's like a bright set of headlights going overhead. You can even see it in broad daylight now, so just look up if you haven't seen it before. Tonight we are live on KFNX 1100 in Phoenix, Arizona, 50,000 watts strong, bringing you the very leading edge of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Next week on X Squared Radio, right here, we will have Don Schmidt, co-author of Witness to Roswell. Now, for those of you that think, oh, gee, Roswell, oh, don't think that at all. He has got a new addition to his book, Witness to Roswell, out, he and Thomas Carey. And I got to tell you, people, this is the granddaddy of all cold cases. And what I mean by cold case, I mean the trail is hotter than ever. But the possibility of getting the warehouse open and getting the hard evidence out into the eye of the public may be the greatest government cover-up of all time. The book is absolutely fantastic, and if you haven't picked it up, you can pick it up at Amazon. Really a great read. You can't hardly put it down. It's like the ultimate whodunit. If you really want to see a masterful job of how the government literally just intimidated its way into the most incredible cover-up ever, get the book Witness to Roswell and check it out. We welcome all of our listeners in Phoenix, Arizona. This is our fifth week in the Phoenix market. This is a three-hour program, and we're on from 5 to 7 your time in Phoenix. We would like to be on 5 to 8. The really great stuff that goes way out there at the fringe happens between 7 and 8 o'clock your time. In the meantime, tonight we have open lines again. This is the month of the year when lots and lots of people go on vacation, including guests that we might have on the program. So many of them are getting ready for the fall lecture schedule, ourselves included. We will be in a couple places this fall. The One Spirit Weekend is coming up, the first weekend of October. That's in Sedona, Arizona, down there. So if you're in the neighborhood, make sure to go to the website, xsquaredradio.com. Click on the One Spirit Weekend banner and check it out, because it might be the best conference for your life. And in the latter part of October, October 30th through November 1st, up in Burlington, Wisconsin, is the Vortex Conference. Now, that's a conference if you're interested in UFOs. This is up and coming. They've been having it for years, but now it's beginning to really, really swell. And the quality of speakers is really gaining as well. Jesse Marcel is going to be there. Stanton Friedman's going to be there. I'll be there. We want to meet you. If you're a listener to X Squared Radio, this would be a very affordable way if you're in the Northwest to or in the Midwest to come check us out. That's the Vortex Conference in Burlington, Wisconsin. And this is X Squared Radio. We'll be back in about 40 seconds. X Squared Radio is the high echelon of scientific talk radio. We are an internet radio broadcast coming to you through the BBS radio network and rebroadcast to the Conscious Media Network, and now live on the KFNX 1100 radio, 50,000 watts strong in Phoenix, Arizona. In the news, Claudette, the third storm of the Atlantic hurricane season, spun up with surprising speed overnight in an area well east of the heaviest concentration of U.S. energy platforms, which stretch along the coast from Mobile Bay to Brownsville, Texas. Forecasters said it could dump up to 6 inches of rain along the coast and push a 3 to 5 foot storm surge ashore. It was expected to hit land late on Sunday in the Florida Panhandle, but did not appear to be a threat to U.S. oil and gas production in the Gulf, which is home to almost half of U.S. refinery capacity, a quarter of oil production, and 15% of natural gas output. The season has begun early and in earnest. If you haven't thought about buying an electric vehicle, you might start now. Go to globalgreencars.com for more information. Globalgreencars.com. The bigger threat could come from Hurricane Bill, which forecasters expect to whip up into a major Category 3 hurricane with winds of more than 110 miles per hour by Friday. Hurricanes of Category 3, 4, or 5 on the Saffir-Simpson intensity scale are the most destructive types. So you want to keep an eye on those. And if you don't like putting all your eggs in the internal combustion basket, you might think of alternatives to that. It's open lines tonight on X Squared Radio. As I said, next week we have Don Schmidt, co-author of Witness to Roswell, coming on. Our phone numbers, for those of you in any market, worldwide, toll-free, 888-228-4494. Anything on your mind in the world of science or in the world of science fiction? If you've seen a good movie and want to know what the plausibility of those events might be, if you've seen the previews for the up-and-coming movie 2012, you might want to give us a call, since myself and my co-author wrote the definitive work on the subject of 2012. We have had Jose Arguez on the program, the man that started it all back in the 50s, the awareness of 2012 and the end of the Mayan calendar. Back then, there might have been five people talking about it, and now there's 5 million websites on it, which is why the movie is coming out, a la The Day After Tomorrow. Also, if you're near a cell phone tower, if you're one of the lucky ones with free nights and weekends on that cell phone, don't hesitate. If you can get to a cell phone tower, on planet, off planet, doesn't matter to us, 530-776-5154. That's 530-776-5154. Our studios are in Paradise, California. Our remote site in Western Idaho State, where our R&D lab is right now. We just completed constructing our 2010 electric pickup truck. We call it the G3. So just if you want an idea what it looks like, what it performs like, go to globalgreencars.com. Check it out. The electric solar wind sail developed at the Finnish Meteorological Institute 2 years ago has moved rapidly from invention towards implementation. Electric sail propulsion might have a large impact on space research and space travel throughout the solar system. Nothing new. Those of you that saw Star Wars, where Count Dooku is opening his solar sail personal craft and jetting across the galaxy. The electric solar wind sail was developed by Dr. Pekka Janhunen. It might revolutionize traveling in space. The electric sail uses the solar wind as its thrust source and therefore needs no fuel or propellant. Although it accelerates very slowly, the solar wind is a continuous plasma stream emanating from the sun. Changes in the properties of the solar wind cause auroral brightening and magnetic storms, among other things, theorists say. Although there doesn't seem to be a direct correlation between solar wind and the occurrence of auroras at either pole. Quote, "We haven't encountered major problems in any of the technical fields thus far. This has already enabled us to start planning the first test mission," close quote, says Dr. Pekka Janhunen. An important sub-goal was reached when the Electronics Research Laboratory of the University of Helsinki managed to develop a method for constructing a multi-line micrometeoroid-resistant tether out of very thin metal wires using ultrasonic welding. I don't need to tell you that keeping ultra-thin metal wires untangled while you're deploying or retracting your solar sail might prove a little bit of a challenge. Keep in mind, the solar wind moves out pretty good. We recorded it this morning at 250 kilometers per second. That's putting it out there. Although you can catch it, it's a rather slow acceleration. After a few weeks, you can get your speed up very high. But if you get the speed up to, say 200 kilometers per second, you're going to need something to slow down, or you're going to miss your stop. Just kind of interesting technical developments. The newly developed technique allows the bonding together of thin metal wires in any geometry. Thus, the method might also have spin-off applications outside the electric sail. For those of you that don't understand what that means, it's a very fancy way of weaving a giant fishnet together out of very thin metal wires, just using ultrasonics to weld the wires together instead of a laser or an arc welder or weaving it together like fabric. It's just more or less touched with radio frequencies, and that causes the wires to weld together. One other problem is a challenge known as the dynamo effect. For those of you that are familiar with this experiment, no news here, but for those of you holding onto a steering wheel right now, driving down the highway outside Phoenix, or sitting at your favorite workstation, the dynamo effect is an effect that occurs when a stationary wire is placed into a moving ion field. It has a tendency to generate electricity, sort of like shuffling your feet across the carpet and then reaching out for that little metal doorknob in the middle of the winter. It's not like static electricity, it's more like charge builds up in the wire. The Dynamo experiment in space was done with a very high-tech Kevlar fiber rope that was let out of the space shuttle into, behind the space shuttle as it was traveling at around 17,000 miles an hour into the upper atmosphere. And a few seconds after reeling the rope out into the stream, this high-temperature Kevlar rope exploded. Yes, it exploded, just like they connected it into too high a voltage. And that is, in fact, exactly what happened. Too much current flow along the rope, way more than they expected, and the darn stuff just exploded. Fortunately, it was well below the current threshold for the space shuttle. No harm done. But the experiment proved that even around the Earth, while you're dragging a conducting fiber through an ion field, you're going to get an ion flow. So if you place yourself into the solar wind and you deploy this metal net into it, you're going to get one heck of a solar wind surge from that dynamo effect. Better have a lot of light bulbs around to absorb the energy. All I'm saying, keep your arms inside the vehicle, folks. An international team of scientists have found the source of the stream of particles that make up the solar wind. In a presentation on Wednesday, the 2nd of April, at the RAS National Astronomy Meeting in Belfast, Professor Louise Hara of the UCL Mullard Space Science Laboratory explained how astronomers have used a UK-led instrument on the orbiting Hinode Space Observatory to finally track down the starting point for the wind. This is sort of like following a hurricane to its point of origin. Rather tricky business, to be sure. Where is the source of the solar wind? You know, we have to look at it from about 90 million miles away, so it's not like you could just go up and verify the source. The solar wind consists of electrically charged particles that flow out from the sun in all directions. It takes about 73 hours or so for these particles to get from the sun to the Earth. Fortunately, the Earth has a very nice magnetosphere around it, and these particles are safely routed around our planet instead of striking the surface of our planet, which would effectively sterilize it. And most days you can go out with a short sleeve shirt with no apparent damage. If you'll listen to X Squared Radio every Sunday, we'll let you know what the proton count is. These are the solid particles, not the photons, but the solid particles that make their way from the sun to the Earth. We try to keep those proton counts rather low, because if they get up, they can be rather hazardous to biological systems, namely humans. Even at their slowest, the particles race along at 200 kilometers per second, taking less than 10 days to travel from the sun to the Earth. In the event of a solar flare, which you will know about from two movies recently out, one is Knowing with Nicolas Cage, and the other one, upcoming pretty soon, is 2012. It only takes about 73 hours for these very high-energy explosive particles to reach the Earth from the sun. But normally the solar wind takes about 10 days. That's 93 million miles in 10 days. Pretty good clip. When stronger gusts of the wind run into the magnetic field of Earth, there can be dramatic consequences, from creating beautiful displays of northern and southern lights called aurora, to interfering with electronic systems on satellites, sometimes even overloading electrical power grids on the ground. Not a good thing. Excuse me while I pour a little agua down my throat. Much better. Water, we like it. From its launch in the autumn of 2006, scientists have used the Hinode mission to study the sun in unprecedented detail. One of the instruments on the probe, and this is really cool, if you're thinking of going into science, one of the interesting areas to go into is instrumental analysis, and you may even want to specialize in spectrometry. For those of you that don't know what that is, it's a little like your eyes. As you're driving down the highway, your eyes pick up contrasting shapes, which are made from photons bouncing off of everything from light sources into your eyes, converted into electrical impulses interpreted by your brain as reality. Electronic instruments do the same thing, except they greatly extend the range that we can see. You might say, seeing is believing. Well, fine. Extend the range of your sight. The United Kingdom built Extreme Ultraviolet Imaging Spectrometer, it's called EIS, measures the speed at which material flows out from the sun. The sun is a cauldron of hot gas shaped by magnetic fields, which create bright regions of activity on the solar surface. Using EIS, the scientists found that at the edges of these bright regions, hot gas spurts out at high speeds. And these speeds can get rather breakneck, very close to the speed of light. Magnetic fields connect the regions together, even when they are widely separated. For example, in the HINOD probe, images that Professor Haro present at the conference we just mentioned, the magnetic fields linked two regions almost 500,000 kilometers apart. Those of you still stuck in the English system, that's somewhere around 280,000 miles. I really wish everyone would just switch over to the metric system and make it easy for all of us. Milliliters, not fluid ounces. Millimeters, not inches. Come on, people, we can do it. Dividing by 10 is so much easier than dividing by 64. A distance equivalent to 40 Earths placed side by side in space is about 500,000 kilometers. When magnetic fields from two regions collide, they allow hot gas to escape from the sun, sort of like squeezing a balloon very hard, full of water, and watching it poke out between your fingers. It's hard to keep universal pressure on that pesky little water balloon, and some of it is just going to blow out between your fingers like a little bubble. That's exactly what happens in these magnetic fields. They can't keep the large surface area of our sun completely contained, and when these magnetic anomalies, sometimes called sunspots, these dark areas of very intense magnetic fields, you sort of get a blowout, and this material flows out as the solar wind. And we also have another source, which is called the coronal hole. So those of you listening to us live tonight, we would always appreciate a phone call. We talk about just about anything you want to talk about. We only limit it from two subjects. We do not do conspiracy theories here, and we don't do ghosts. You can get that on other radio programs. Here, we're into the physics, the metaphysics, the science, and the spirituality. If you want to talk about it, give us a call. The phone number, toll-free, anywhere on Earth, 888-228-4494. Anywhere else on planet, off planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us at 530-776-5154. Do not hesitate to send us a text message over Skype. It's very easy. Just look for Brooks Agnew. Easy to find. The U.S. plan to return astronauts to the moon by 2020 will not happen without a big boost in NASA's budget, leaving only the International Space Station as a viable target for the country's human space program, according to a presidential review panel. It seems the government has given so much money away to the failed major car makers and failed banks that there's nothing left for space exploration. Interesting. I think we should rename them the Giverment instead of the government. I think that's kind, don't you? The Human Space Flight Plans Committee, which presented its preliminary findings to the White House on Friday, concluded that a human mission to Mars currently would be too risky. Compared to what, Mr. President? Going out into space where there's no air is, in my opinion, less risky than going out in a field full of speeding bullets. If I have one allergy, I would say that's it. Speeding cars and bullets. Now that's risky. The committee said the new U.S. exploration initiative aimed at landing astronauts on the moon by 2020 is doomed because its 10-year, $108 billion budget has been shaved by about $30 billion. Gee, that's very close to the number that it will take to take over healthcare in the United States. Interesting. After the shuttles are retired, NASA plans to pay Russia to transport crews to the station. The panel's recommendations include adding $2.5 billion to NASA's budget between 2011 and 2014 for commercial launch services to the space station. So there you go, Earth explorers. No more human flights with the American flag. A travesty, and we are lamenting that here at X Squared Radio. Here at this station, we believe that human space exploration, probes are fine, satellites are fine, all kinds of telescopic views into space, wonderful. But nothing replaces the human eye and the human awe in space. To be able to turn around and look at Earth in the dark solitude of space, we lose the perspective of how fragile a basket we live in. If each of us could, just for one moment, not those of you that are driving, please don't try this. If you could just for one moment close your eyes and wonder what it would be like to sit out there 23,000 miles in space and look back at Earth with its backdrop of cold vacuum, one side lit, one side dark, wonderful white clouds painting an ever-changing picture of life as water in the form of billions of gallons flows through the sky of our world, wondering how small the land masses look in that blue pearlescent body floating in the blackness of space, and how unbelievable it is that here, maybe the 21st century, maybe the 10th or 20th or 500,000th time, the race of man has reached this point in its development, able to fly around the planet, able to sail above and below the ocean, able to communicate with each other in a split second, and also able to annihilate one another with terrible weapons. And how maybe this time, with our intelligence, our experience, our cumulative wisdom, maybe this time we will survive. And those words are kind of amazing, those words, survive. What in the world are we talking about? Well, let's find out. Sam, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Doctor. I had a question. As the system moves through the galaxy, are we going to encounter different types of space as we move through the galaxy, or different types of situations that may be abnormal to what we're used to moving through, or whatever?
Well, yes, absolutely, and the term abnormal is is certainly relevant as well. I mean, the conditions pretty much exist with very little change in a static manner throughout the universe. Things are moving pretty slowly in the universe. Earth and its solar system, on the other hand, are moving at about 18.5 miles per second through space. So once every 26,000 years, we finish a precession where our solar system goes through the zodiac, and we're back around now in a somewhat familiar neighborhood with ancient civilizations who tried to leave us a message. Hey, guys, listen, when you get back around to this point, you know, where Aquarius is beginning to start again, you might want to pay attention. We're going to leave some icons for you in stone. Hopefully they'll survive us. And that's kind of where we're at right now. We are being exposed to completely different wavelengths of energy and photons than we have been in recorded history. And I would say safely at least 5,000 years ago, we have not been exposed to anything like this. And it is having its effect. It's having its effect on weather. It's warming all the planets in our solar system. And it may even be having an effect on human consciousness.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, thank you, Doctor. I kind of want to get some information. So thank you for your time.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Please, Sam, call back anytime.
You bet.
All right. So one thing that I like about Sam's question is it does allow us to consider that maybe we have a different tool in our box this time. Maybe the last few times we got there, we were even more warlike than we are right now. We had even more terrible, tyrannical leaders than we have right now. Maybe we had, I can't imagine us having a more apathetic populace, but maybe we had a less empowered populace than we have right now. We certainly have all the freedom, all the power, all the economic control that any population would ever want. Ultimately, we, the people, are in charge of this planet. We have just abdicated that control to one who wants it worse than we do. Oh, we complain about it. My goodness, I hear the moaning and the wailing every single day. But do they do anything about it? No. Do they know what to do about it? Maybe not. If they listened to X Squared Radio, of course they would know what to do about it. Is the solution with the talking heads of conservative talk radio AM around the world? Probably not. Is the answer at the mall? Is the answer on the back of your credit card in the small print? Probably not. The answer is deep within you, as is the solution to the entire universe. Not to be too metaphysical about it, but there is definitely power in the individual. And certainly an empowered individual you are. You can read. You can hear free radio, unfettered. You can travel anywhere in the world that you want. You can spend your money like your speech anywhere you want. The question is, are you a sheep, are you a lemming, or are you an individual? Here is the paradox. On the one hand, you can say, I really don't want to do anything no one else is not doing. I only want to do things everyone else is doing. On the other hand, I don't know a single person that doesn't say, oh, wow, I really wouldn't mind owning that. Nobody has that. Well, have you ever thought about the person that builds that thing that it is you want that might be so rare that no one else has? That dress, that ring, that pair of sunglasses, that car, that paint job, that house? Have you ever wondered what a risk that person took? You went to the bank and said, yes, I would like to build electric cars. And the bank would say, well, gee, that sounds like a really good idea, but who else is building electric cars? Answer, no one. No, nobody's building electric cars right now. And that's why I want to build them. And so the bank would say, oh, gee, you know, I don't think so. You know, we don't really want to loan our money on something that nobody else is doing. You know, we're just not really sure about that. Okay, scenario two, 6 months later, same guy comes back. Yeah, I'd like to borrow money to build electric cars. And the bank says, well, who else is building electric cars? Oh, there are about 30 companies building electric cars. It's rather popular right now. Oh, gee, no, I don't think we could loan money on that. You see, everybody's doing that. So, you know, there's nothing unique about, you know, what it is you're doing. We don't see what your market advantage would be now. Well, that's the story of empowerment here in this country. And unfortunately, whether you want to believe it or not, just about everybody within earshot is in that same boat. However, you have all the economic power in the world. And you, John Q. Public, Sally Q. Public, you have all the political power in the world as well. Yes, you do. You don't have to run for office to be powerful. What you do have to do is click the pen, type the keyboard, send your congressman or your senator a letter, not a form letter, not a postcard, not one of those email things that you receive, join this, sign this, put your name and address on that. That's phishing stuff. I mean sitting down and saying, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Sitting down and saying, you know, I'm really tired of going out and wanting to buy an automobile and nothing out there gets more than 40 miles to the gallon. Everything out there burns fuel. How ridiculous is this? I want to buy something that doesn't burn fuel and gets 300 miles to the gallon. Guess what? It's out there. It certainly is. You can buy it. You can drive it. You can stop polluting, and so can your friends, and so can your neighborhood, and so can your city and your state. Do you know that Israel recently passed a national law? No more gasoline vehicles imported. None. If you want to import a vehicle, it better burn diesel, preferably biodiesel, or it better be electric. Now, how about that for taking the bull by the horns? How courageous, how wonderfully exemplary, absolutely extraordinary leadership. And you could probably do that with your own household. No more gasoline vehicles for this house. Extraordinary. I like it. Let's talk a little bit about oil. Someone wrote in and asked, what is the deepest oil well in the world? Well, the world's deepest well was drilled by ExxonMobil's Russian subsidiary on the Sakhalin Island near Siberia. The 37,016-foot deep well is part of Exxon Nefgas's Sakhalin 1 project, which dug its first well in 2003, known as the Z-11 well. It is a product of the Yastreb rig, which is the world's largest land-based drilling rig, ExxonMobil said. By the way, you should know the lubricant that tested best in these deep hole operations is none other than, that's right, TVT. The number one lubrication additive in the world is TVT. We sell it in the online store, X Squared Radio. Just check it out. You put it in your car and your engine will stop wearing. You put it in your manual transmission and your transmission will stop wearing. If you don't believe me, you can check it out. Just go to the TVT Green Star link at X Squared Radio. Look at the titanium drilling video and you can discover this for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Check it out. TVT, total vehicle technology. So why are they drilling these deep holes? One would ask the question, all over Kentucky and Tennessee and Texas and Kansas, oh, all over Oklahoma, and even on the coasts, we have been drilling our own oil since the 1800s. Reality, people, not one major oil discovery since 1974. That's right. That's right. Oh, a few little ones here and there, a billion barrels here, a billion barrels there, North Dakota, off the coast of Florida, blah, blah, blah. But all the big ones have been found. All the ones in Saudi Arabia have been found. All the ones in Russia have been found. All the ones in the Gulf of Mexico found already. Only small oil left. Unless, they theorize, someone drills a very deep hole in the earth, and that's what the Russians are doing with their partners, ExxonMobil. Don't know what you know what it takes to hold on to 8 miles of steel hanging from a Kelly. A Kelly is the revolving brake on these rigs. One false move, and you twist off that drill bit miles into the ground, and you're not getting it out. Your first mistake is your last. So why drill the deep holes? Well, the theory is that oil is constantly being formed deep in the earth, and it just bubbles up into these volcanic cavities left behind from the formation of the earth, and that's what we drilled into. That's our low-hanging fruit. That's what we've been running our planet on for the last 100 years plus. What if the theory doesn't hold, people? What if there isn't an ultimate pool of oil in the center of the planet? That's a good question. You know, in 2003, we sent a probe to Mars, and actually two probes. We sent the Marsis satellite, which goes around Mars, and then we sent its two counterparts, Spirit and Opportunity, which rove around in a small backyard-sized plot on the Mars. And they have a combination of ground-probing radars on them using radio waves to look into Mars, and they can see down to around 3,000 feet, looking for water, liquid water under the surface of Mars. So far, no rivers, so far, no underground lakes, but they haven't really looked that far. And, of course, the way we submitted it to NASA, it requires at least two antennas for it to work. They only have one. So they're only going to get qualitative measurements anyway, not quantitative measurements. We told them how to do it. And we had one request, and that is, look, after you finish looking for water on Mars, would you mind retuning the frequency and see if there's oil on Mars? Oh, I know, that sounds kind of silly, but we did. We wrote it, and we said, please look for oil on Mars. The reason we did that is because I wanted to know if oil comes from the surface or comes from deep inside the planet. Is it the leftover of cometary tails the way some astrophysicists think? Or is it the leftovers of billions of years of algae growth and death converting CO2 into oxygen and sugar? Interesting theory, for which I might add, there are no answers unless somebody retunes those antennas up there and starts looking for oil. I don't think they're going to do it. I've asked them to do it several times, and so far, no takers. But what if these 8-mile holes are not revealing the billion, trillion barrel reservoirs that they're looking for? Well, then I guess we've kind of put all of our eggs in the internal combustion basket, have we not? And I'm not saying all internal combustion is bad. Diesel is certainly much, 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 much more efficient than gasoline and much cleaner when combined with biofuels and combined with hydrogen. It is much more efficient than gasoline. But there are other materials, such as alcohols, that can be used that are completely pollution-free and only put out CO2 and water, both compounds easily assimilated by our environment. And it's just kind of interesting to see that we're sort of addicted to gasoline, as some famous president once said. And don't forget, next week on X Squared Radio, we have Donald Schmidt coming on the program to talk about the latest edition of Witness to Roswell. This is the granddaddy of all cold case files, people. It is also the one with the most hard evidence. The witness list and their testimony is so strong, there isn't a judge in the country that would not state guilty as charged. The biggest government cover-up in history, sure to make the headlines again and again. Well, here we go. Get your first shot at the story next Sunday right here on X Squared Radio. Don't pass it up. Don Schmidt's a really good interview. Hopefully we can get his co-author, Thomas Carey, to come on with us. And we'll really enjoy ourselves. Let's take a short musical break, about 4 minutes. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio after this. Wonderful sounds, David Acton, the prodigal. Once upon a time, there was a king. And the king, on up in years, decided he needed a legacy for his kingdom, so he commissioned the building of a great highway across his country. Finally, at the end of the construction period, the king announced a great celebration. We would have a contest to see who can travel the highway best. And so the day came, and people came from all over the country to travel the highway from one end to the other, marching bands, colorful banners, acrobats, horses, wagons, artists, all kinds of musicians and children. All day long they traveled the road from one end to the other, with the king waiting at the end, ready to give the prize away. Finally, at the end of the day, Near sundown, one man, bedraggled, knees worn out of his pants, hands dirty, hair disheveled, walked toward the king, nothing but a white sack in one hand. Approaching the king, he said, "I am so sorry I took so long to travel the highway, my king, but you see there was this pile of trash and debris in the middle of the road, so I stopped to move it to the side, and as I did, I discovered this sack of gold underneath it, and I knew it belonged to you, so I brought it to you, my king." And the king, so overwhelmed, stepped forward and said, "Oh, no, 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 my good man. The gold is yours. You see, he who travels the highway best is he who makes it easier for those who follow." So I would like to give a tribute to those great pioneers, those great brave men and women who spent their lives preparing for and taking the most amazing journeys into space. 12 sets of footprints on the moon. Many hundreds in the space shuttle, putting various experiments into space, spending time in a space station, bringing back their testimonies, leaving their handiwork in space. Because our administration has announced the end of human space travel. It's over, people. The era of humans in space, Americans in space, is over. And it is my tribute to them. A great melancholy moment of silence, as now Americans have to rent a seat on a Russian craft to return to space. Surely, surely there's a better way. Maybe next generation. In our next hour, we're going to get a little bit into global warming. And we're going to touch on the politics of a little bit. I know it's a very hot subject, and it's gotten hotter of late because the grip on the economics of it is beginning to loosen a little bit. Shall I say it is slipping through the fingers of the eco-warriors. And we want to talk a little bit about the politics of that. We want to talk definitely about the science of that. If you have a comment to make on that, get your finger on the speed dial button, because it's toll-free worldwide, 888-228-4494. Anywhere else, on planet, off planet, if you can't get a toll-free number in Europe, I know exactly what that's like, no problem. Here's the number, 530-776-5154. Those of you in the Phoenix market, you're with us for one more hour. Do not let the opportunity slide by. Sam called us in this hour, wanted to ask us a great question about whether our solar system is traveling to an old place in the galaxy, new place in the galaxy. But the bottom line is, are we being exposed to a new energy? And the answer is yes. Yes, we are. And if you've got some insight on what that energy might be, either you've got some inside track, or better yet, if you've had a conversation with someone who's been out there, then call in. Give us a comment. We're always open-minded for the enlightened ones to bring their ideas to the program. X Squared Radio is a three-hour program, so if you're not getting all 3 hours, give the folks down there at KFNX a call. Tell them you'd like the third hour of X Squared Radio. And, of course, if you own a small business and you want to access the Phoenix market, or better yet, you want to expand to a global market, one thing's very good about listeners to X Squared Radio, my fellow Earth explorers. Our listeners are sitting there with a PC and a credit card in their hands. So if you've got a product that would sell anywhere, you need to advertise on X Squared Radio. It's easy to do. All you have to do is write me info@x2-radio.com or give me a call. The phone number's on the website. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. Live voiceovers, banners. Believe me, the BBS Radio Network is the number one internet talk radio network in the world. And X Squared Radio is one of the top radio programs on that network. No brag, just fact, people. Just trying to let you know where the value is. So if you're thinking about advertising, believe me, don't let the radio stations tell you anything about CPM, contacts per million. Let's get it instead of 50 cents CPM. Let's get it down to about a penny. How about that? Yeah, we have rates that will get you out in the world. You'll sell product in Australia, the UK, Japan, Canada, Mexico. Let's expand your horizons a little bit right here at X Squared Radio. Don't go away because we're going to take a break. Of course, the network break, CNN News is coming up. So don't pass us up. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio right after this break. Hang in there, people. Number one scientific talk radio program in North America, right here. We'll be back. Thank you. welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. If you are a small business, a large business, or just thinking about going into business, you must have a business card. If you think it's expensive and takes 2 weeks to get, well, you're wrong. Click on the Vista Prints logo at X Squared Radio, and you can get quality business cards for free. Yeah, how about that price? For free. Is that cheap enough? And if you want the premium backgrounds, the shiny coatings, two-sided printing, or even your own logo on the card, they can do that and get it to you within 2 days. Is that fast enough? Come on, click on the Vista Prints banner at X Squared Radio today. Also, there is something you should see. It's called the Horizon Project. Now, I know, there's movies coming out and Hollywood's getting involved and it's going to be very entertaining. But you might as well get the science. It's called the Horizon Project, and it's the most compelling video documentary ever done on coming cataclysms of Earth. Don't rely on Hollywood for your future. Go to the science. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio and get the video in your hands today. And if you want to do something amazing for your life and you're within driving distance of Sedona, Arizona, you need to click on the One Spirit Weekend banner at X Squared Radio. This one weekend will give you more tools to work through the challenges of your life than anything else you could do. It's the October 5th weekend, it's affordable, and it's worth it. You click on the banner today and get registered, and don't forget to tell them and your friends you heard about it on X Squared Radio, and they're going to give you a discount and everything, so don't pass it up. And if you've always wanted to go to a convention discussing UFOs, but you've never had the opportunity, here's your chance. You need to click on the Burlington UFO Vortex Conference banner at X Squared Radio. This will get you the registration page. You tell them you heard about it on X Squared Radio, you'll get a discount, and they will treat you very well. If you've never been up to the Wisconsin area, it is fabulous. Hardwood forests like nothing you've ever seen before. And lots of UFO activity. If you haven't seen one before, why don't you make your way up there this October, the 30th through November 1st. Stanton Friedman's going to be there. Jesse Marcel from the Roswell UFO crash incident. And I will be there as well. If you have heard about the third volume of our trilogy, The Ark of Millions of Years, then you already know this. If you haven't heard this, and you're interested in the creation and the destiny of the Earth, if you're interested in the Nephilim and where Adam and Eve came from and how the Earth was formed and where it's going, these are the books for you. The three books were Amazon bestsellers twice. They complete the most comprehensive work ever done on the creation and destiny of the Earth, including the most accurate information about the events leading up to and following 2012. The books are so good, they're being used as textbooks in universities, yet they are easy to read and full of visual information. If you buy now, you will get all three volumes, not only at a package price, but you will also get volumes 1 and 2 in audio for free. That's right. So if you're not a big reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. So, there you go. We'll be back in 40 seconds with more X Squared Radio. Don't go away. If you're not getting all 3 hours of X Squared Radio, just get a hold of the station down at KFNX 1100, and they'll fix you right up. This is a 3-hour program coming to you live on the BBS Radio Network, rebroadcast on the Conscious Media Network, and live at KFNX 1100, 50,000 watts strong. Tune in and get squared. Eco warriors and hype media aside, the fact is, as we head into 2009 and 2010, the world's ice mass has been expanding, not contracting, which will surprise evening news junkies fed a diet of polar bears floating about on ice floes and snow shelves falling into the oceans. But if a whole series of reports on ice growth in the Arctic, the Antarctic, and among glaciers are right, then it is truth in the mainstream media, otherwise known around here as the MSN, what shall we call it, the religion of science, that it's in meltdown, not the polar ice caps. The problem for the MSM, mainstream media, is that it long ago nailed its colors to the climate alarmist mast. By the way, it's no longer called global warming, it's called climate change. No ice cap meltdown, no rising waters, no disappearing islands, no reason for alarm. No alarm, no story. Worst of all, having called yet another global apocalypse wrong, no credibility. So the mainstream media has a significant stake in running highly selective warmongering headlines, not to mention disparaging those scientists who have the temerity to disagree as Holocaust deniers and pseudoscientists. Climate scientist Dr. Ben Herman, past director of the Institute of Atmospheric Physics and former head of atmospheric sciences at the University of Arizona, notes that for the media, quote, "What happens in the Arctic may be an indicator of what will happen in the rest of the world. How about what happens in the Antarctic then? Since its ice area has been increasing, is this also an indicator of what might be happening in the rest of the world?" Close quote. The fact is that the majority of Antarctica has cooled over the past 50 years, and ice coverage has grown to record levels. Take the well-publicized collapse of a 160-square-mile block of the Wilkins Ice Shelf in Antarctica in March 2008. For the alarmist media, this was conclusive proof of the dramatic global warming effects. The Los Angeles Times ran, quote, "Antarctica collapse," close quote, referring to the rapid melt of the Wilkins Shelf. The Sydney Morning Herald ran, "Ice shelf hangs by a thread," and the Salon online news site had the absurd headline, "Bye-bye Antarctica?" question mark. But Joseph D'Alio, first director of meteorology at the Weather Channel and chief meteorologist at Weather Services International, was more prosaic. On his ice cap website, D'Alio wrote that the collapse was the equivalent, given the enormity of Antarctica, of an icicle falling from a snow and ice-covered roof. He added, "The latest satellite images and reports suggest the ice has already refrozen around the broken pieces. In fact, the ice is returning so fast, it is running an amazing 60% ahead of last year when it set a new record." Noting the ludicrous media hype, D'Alio laments, "Yet the world is left with the false impression that Antarctica's ice sheet is also starting to disappear." All right, that's one side of the story. Let's keep going. During October and November 2008, the extent of Arctic ice was 28.7% greater than during the same period in 2007. That's 1 year. 1 year. The Arctic, this is the north area, the northern pole region. The extent of Arctic ice was 28.7% greater than the previous year. According to data published by the International Arctic Research Center, October 2008 saw the fastest ever growth of Arctic sea ice since records began. Not good news for doomsayers like Dr. Mark Cerezé of the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Dr. Cerezé had predicted an ice-free North Pole in the summer of 2008. You'll remember that the first time the legendary area said to contain an opening into the inner Earth was exposed to the open sea was in 2007. That region is quickly becoming ice-locked again, making next summer probably the last chance to conduct the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. Now, you have to understand where the hype is and why the hype is. The main reason that we have this kind of hype is you have to follow the money. Yeah. There is a lot of money in global warming. Let me give you an example. The Society for Climate Change, this is a nonprofit organization, late last year announced that they were going to raise and spend $300 million for awareness about global warming. $300 million. I remind you that the recent grant that was given away to the major car makers last 2 weeks in Indiana by the president was just a little over $300 million. That money was divided up between Ford, GM, Chrysler, Nissan, and Navistar. It just doesn't take a big look at that to see that this is just a bailout in reverse, so don't worry about that. The point is, that $300 million is a lot of money. And where did it come from? That's right, it came from you. Your donations. Donations from other nonprofits. Donations from corporations. That's what went to the Society for Climate Change. So, just to test the waters a little bit, we sent them a couple letters. These letters were asking for small grants to fund small research labs to do things like find better uses for the glycerin byproduct made from biodiesel. Biodiesel is notably much cleaner, like 90% cleaner than regular petroleum diesel when added in small quantities up to 20% to regular diesel. Biodiesel has a 3-to-1 energy return on investment. It's a huge boon and a great addition to the diesel fuel market, providing not only energy independence for the country, but greatly reducing greenhouse gases and particulates in the air. Request denied. We also asked for help in sponsoring small business entrepreneurs coming out of high school. These are nonprofit organizations like the FFA, and another small business organization that helps young people coming out of high school to concentrate and to gain experience in business before they graduate college. Request denied. So the $300 million we asked, okay, so if you're not going to actually give it to solving the problem, what is it that you are doing with the money? Oh, well, we use the money for political activism to make sure that our candidates get into office. Aha, I see. Okay, well, now you see, well, you just follow the money and then you understand what global warming is all about. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. It's not called global warming anymore. It's called climate change. All right, let's go a little bit more. Let's take the other side of the argument here. Let's just talk about it. The media has also made much of the potential opening of the Northwest Passage, but it rarely mentions that similar weather patterns prevailed in the 1930s when two boats, the Naskopi and the Aklavik, famously met up in the passage in 1937. In October 2008, A study by Ohio University confirmed that the current Arctic warming patterns mimic those in the 1920s and 1940s. By July 2008, the Arctic ice, that's above the northern Arctic Circle now, the Arctic ice had increased by nearly 500,000 square miles, not acres, 500,000 square miles over the same first half period in 2007. A NASA study published in the peer-reviewed Geophysical Research Letters in October 2007 had already noted that thinning Arctic ice was more likely the result of unusual winds that had blown older, thicker ice into warmer southern waters. In other words, the Arctic warming experienced more recently could well be the result of the unusual strength of winds, not man-made warming. Well, I don't necessarily agree with all of that. The winds I would agree with. We have to think about, well, what causes the winds? What makes the winds have these kinds of cycles? Turns out it also corresponds with solar minimums. A little bit more energy reaching Earth than would normally reach Earth. We're now in a great solar minimum. Those of you that follow this program know we have not had hardly any sunspots out of solar cycle 24. This is unlike any solar activity that we've ever seen before. And it seems like the sun is taking a big rest right now. Some say it's the calm before the storm. Some say we're entering a new era of solar patterns, one that is rewriting the database. So now we have no old data to go by. We're in new territory, so we really don't know what to expect. And some have said that the interior of the sun, the jet stream of the sun, is controlling the sunspots underneath the surface of the planet and that or the star, and that's why we're not seeing them. But they still say that around 2012, 2013, we should be at a solar maximum, and it should be a doozy. All right. According to the National Snow and Ice Data Center's own figures, world sea ice in April 2008 reached unprecedented levels for the month of April. The World Meteorological Association, the WMO, went to declare 2008 the coolest since 2000. Those of you following the weather this summer will also note, just click on, Fox News, CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS. They're all going to tell you the same thing. More than 3,000 low temperature records set in July in the United States alone. We reported last month anomalous weather in China, in New Jersey, in Orange County, in Australia, in Japan, in the same week. That's right, in the same week. Hail and cold weather in all of these locations, northern and southern hemisphere. Yes, very interesting. The WMO reports that the fall in the global mean temperature since 1998 is not just affecting the polar ice caps either. It is also affecting glaciers elsewhere. I don't know if you caught that. That's a fall in the global mean temperature. That doesn't mean angry temperature. It means average temperature. Global average temperature has been dropping since 1998. That's 11 years, and you haven't heard about it much in the press, have you? Well, that's because there's still money to be made, people. We just can't let it go. According to Tree Hugger magazine, quote, noting that its ice sheet had reached a historical low of 3 meters per square kilometer last summer, it covered around 7.5 meters per square kilometer as recently as 2000, or I'm told Xinhua, that if Norway's average temperature this year equals that in 2007, the ice cap in the Arctic will all melt away. Well, as you have already heard, 2007 was an anomalous year with some very strange winds blowing older, thicker ice out into warmer waters. And that's what caused the melting. And that has already made up that ground and more. We are now in 2009, Tree Hugger Magazine, and we now have the winter of 2008 to use as an example, which has broken all records for cold and for ice development. You can use winter of 2008 numbers now. Further, he urged developed nations to take the lead in significantly reducing greenhouse gas emissions and in crafting a post-Kyoto Protocol climate treaty framework. While his prediction may seem a bit outlandish, there's no denying it may very well come to pass. After all, it wasn't too long ago that climate scientists were confidently asserting that the Arctic ice cap wouldn't be melting until at least the second half of the century. If there's one thing scientists have learned over the past few years, it is that the effects of climate change are too variable and convoluted to make accurate predictions. It is also very detrimental to one's grant outlook if you take the wrong side of the argument. And so self-respecting scientists not wanting to end up on the short end of the grant stick don't want to say global warming isn't happening, but they will go so far as to say that global warming is at least anomalous and maybe even cyclic. Some may go so far as to say, by the way, the activities of man, rather small amount of impact. But is that or is that not really true? Have you traveled the world? Have you seen what other countries are doing? Here in this country, we certainly use our share of petroleum products. We certainly do burn a lot of coal for electricity in this country. In fact, most of the electricity in this country is made from the burning of coal, which, if you haven't looked in the sky recently, is none too clean. There's no such thing as clean burning coal. I repeat, there is no such thing as clean burning coal. You can clean it up after it gets into the stack. You can sequester the CO2 in saline solutions and pump it under the ground. You can tie it to an algae biodiesel plant. Oh, that's right. We don't do that in this country. And you can convert the CO2 back into oxygen. There are lots of things you can do, but there's no such thing as clean burning coal. As you can see, one group looks at the polar ice caps during the winter, and one looks at them during the summer, and there is no agreement. That is why we want to conduct our own expedition to find out for sure. Both camps are invited to submit candidates for the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition for the grueling contest to see who is right. We're going to try and take the very last possible moment of opportunity weather-wise to make this expedition. If you want to take part in it, there are several ways to do this. The neatest way that we've got right now is you can go to one of the websites. We have two. One is called NPIEE.org. That's North Pole Inner Earth Expedition.org, NPIEE.org. The other is to go to the APEX link. That's APEX, stands for Advanced Planetary Explorations, at PhoenixScienceFoundation.org. Both are nonprofits, and both are helping to put on this expedition. But we've gotten rather creative in our stilted scientific not-so-good marketing ways. And we now have a Facebook page. The Facebook page is just facebook.com/NPIEE.org. Very simple. Now, we have a goal with this, because at the NPIEE.org Facebook page, there is a fan shop. Those of you that know something about anything about Facebook will know what a fan shop is. A fan shop is the tab at the top of the Facebook page at facebook.com/NPIEE.org. We want you to click on the fan shop. And in the fan shop is a rather ingenious little revenue engine called a widget. And that widget has a button on it called Share. If you go to the fan shop, we want you to click on the Share button on that widget. Now, it doesn't cost you anything. Nothing. It's free. You click on the Share button, and that will allow you to put this widget in your profile on your personal or your fan Facebook. It's a really neat social networking way of getting the word out. In this widget is a video that you can watch. There are pictures you can look at. There's all kinds of blogging and comments being made. And you can contact us either by mail or by phone or by email. All the information is in there in one little postage stamp size widget. What we want you to do is we want you to grab that widget tonight and stick it in your Facebook profile. Our goal is to have 200,000 of these widgets on profiles within 30 days. It can be done. It's free. It doesn't cost you a dime. But it does get our message out. It does get the opportunity for funding to come to the nonprofits to get this voyage underway. As you you know, we have gone all around the world trying to find ships that can make this expedition. There are two. And both of them belong to the one country that has sovereign rights to travel to this area, Russia. That's correct. So, that's all we want you to do. In helping out, let's go find out for ourselves. Let's not play around anymore. Let's make it happen. So, what we want to do right now is we're going to take a short break. CNN News coming on down in Phoenix, and we'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
All in a dream, all in a dream.
advertising with X Squared Radio is easy. All you have to do is call KFNX 1100 at 602-277-1100 and ask for Francis. This is the number one radio program from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday evenings on AM radio in Phoenix. It is also the number one radio program on the VBS radio network, the Internet's largest paranormal Internet talk radio program. It's also the Internet's largest network, and X Squared Radio is right up there at the top. If you would like to advertise on our websites or have live content put into the program, you may write us at bagnew@xsquaredradio.com. Really, really easy to do. And our buyers are a little bit different than most listeners, you know. They're sitting there listening to the radio with a PC and a credit card in their hands. And if you are in business, you're a small business, a large business, or just thinking about going into business, you must have a business card. If you think it's expensive, it takes 2 weeks to get, you're wrong. Click on the Vista Prince logo at X Squared Radio, and you can get quality business cards for free. How about that? Is that cheap enough? And if you want the premium background, shiny coatings, two-side printing, or even your own logo on the card, they can do it and get it to you within 2 days. Is that fast enough? Come on, click on the Vista Prince banner at X Squared Radio today. We'll be back in 40 seconds. More X Squared Radio. Tune in and get squared.
Space travel.
If you want to join us on X Squared Radio tonight, we are a live call-in radio program, toll-free anywhere worldwide, 888-228-4494. And if you can't get a toll-free number out there in Europe or in Australia, you can reach us at 530-776-5154. In the Phoenix market, we definitely want you to call in. There is something out there in the environmental world, and it's called the 350 buzz. Those of you that don't know what it is, you're about to find out what it is. You have likely seen the number 350 pop up when talking about carbon emissions. One of the up-and-coming growing businesses, and I mean this isn't a small business, people. This is big business. This is the kind of business that's gonna reprint currency. It's called carbon credits. Carbon credits. This is credits that are produced by companies that make things like biodiesel, cellulosic ethanol, solar cells, wind generators, advanced battery technologies, and these carbon credits can be bought by polluters. And the fact that they can be bought by polluters means that they will be brokered by someone with lots of money. And that's what's happening. They're getting into the business and they're beginning to trade carbon credits. The number 350, the 350 buzz, is key to survival of the planet. It represents the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that has been determined to be safe if we expect life to continue to thrive on this planet. As author and activist Bill McKibben noted during Earth Month, top scientist James Hansen and his NASA team have stated that anything above 350 parts per million CO2 is not compatible with the planet on which civilization developed and to which life is adapted. In other words, we need to be under that number, or else we need to be under the number 350 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere, or else. Right now, I know you're curious, where are we now? Where are we now? Right now, we are at 387 parts per million, and that's a problem. That's a big problem. We're 37 parts per million over the limit. And the best way to reduce this number, is to buy an electric vehicle. They produce no CO2. And participating countries want to become energy independent. This is the way. Short of that, it means driving less miles. It means doing something to lower the amount of CO2 output. What happens above 350? Okay, someone wrote in, what happens above 350 parts per million? Well, to be a little dire about it, life as we know it eventually ends. Yeah, that's correct. What happens above 350 parts per million CO2? Life as we know it eventually ends. And I might say abruptly, it isn't going to be gradual. I'll tell you why, because there's a chain reaction involved here. And you need to know this. You need to have this knowledge as you make your buying decisions. Because ultimately, it isn't governments that are in charge of this. It is not governments who are empowered to do a thing about it. It's you. It's you, the consumer. It's you, the user of the carbon. It's you. Simply put, 350 parts per million is the amount of CO2 that our natural systems are able to process without major negative effects. In other words, there's enough algae, there's enough trees and grass and other plants on the earth that they can process, they can metabolize CO2 into sugar, turn it back into oxygen using sunlight and some minerals in the earth. That's our natural system's threshold for processing it without major negative effects. For example, about one quarter of our CO2 emissions is absorbed by our oceans, because our oceans are home to a lot of microscopic plants. Algae is responsible for nearly all the oxygen production in the world. No, it's not the rainforests. In fact, old growth trees don't put out much oxygen. They may even put out more CO2 than they do oxygen. They certainly put out more methane because old growth is rotting. It is new growth that consumes CO2 and makes oxygen. Actually, if you wanted to make a case for forestry, I'm not talking about logging, I'm talking about forestry, management of the forests. Keeping new growth constantly coming on in the forests and removing the old growth, underbrush, overbrush, those dead trees that are hanging there, large trees that are never going to grow anymore, they're blocking the sunlight from the younger trees. Forestry is a key to making the forests make more oxygen and process more CO2. But be that as it may, about 350 parts per million is the threshold. However, 350 is too much for the oceans to be able to handle without impacting pH balance. Now, those of you that don't know what pH is, yes, you've heard it in shampoo commercials and you've heard it in pool cleaning chemical commercials, makeup, all kinds of things like that. I know. Strong enough for a man, made for a woman. You've heard it. Okay, we're talking about pH. This is the inverse log of the amount of hydrogen, free hydrogen ions in the solution. The lower the pH, the more acidic it gets. When CO2 dissolves in water, it has the ability of making the water more acidic. When the oceans turn acidic, it causes changes from coral reef bleaching to softening of crustacean shells to altering food systems and having a long chain reaction. Ah, chain reaction. That's really the word we're looking for, because climate change, global change, up and down, whatever. But the amount of cars is increasing. The amount of coal being burned, increasing. Not so much us in the United States. Our engines are getting smaller and smaller and more efficient, and very soon, more and more electric cars are going to start hitting the roads and we're actually, we may even flatten out as far as how much fossil fuels we're burning in this country. But we're not the only country. I've been to China, let me tell you. They're not building hundreds of skyscrapers there. They're building thousands of skyscrapers there. India, China are coming on strong, and they want everything right now. However, that being said, they're being pretty smart about it. Every city I've been to in China, and this year I've been to 6 major Chinese cities, every single one of them is covered with electric vehicles. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of electric motorcycles. You don't see very many gasoline motorcycles in China. The ones you do see are old. They're old. And let me tell you, people, there are no 1800cc Harley Davidsons riding around in China. 90cc's, 100cc's, maybe 125cc's. The vast majority of new vehicles are electric. That's correct. Electric. They run on batteries. Zero pollution. They charge them up at home with 110 volts. They drive them to work. They work all day. They drive them home, and they use zero fuel. Shanghai, Beijing, Chengdu. I had no trouble breathing the air there, people. They're not burning coal. Their power stations are well outside the city, and more, they are nuclear-powered. Clean burning, clean production of electricity, and they're driving electric vehicles. And right now, countries like Israel have outlawed the importation of gasoline vehicles. That's right. You can bring diesel, and they prefer biodiesel, and you can bring electric. Those are the only two choices you have. Also in those countries, they make a good use of mass transit. We don't do that so much in our country. So they're actually going about it pretty smartly. That being said, what are we going to do about 37 parts per million over the limit? That's a really, really good question. But here's the important reason why we need to address that question. Here's the reason why we need to do something about it. Here's the reason why, global warming or not, we are having an impact from our habits on the Earth. A chain reaction could mean that the oceanic density can change, the temperature can rise, and this will release a huge ocean of methane that's trapped nice and cold on the deep sea floor. This happens from time to time as the currents push methane up to shallow levels. The gas bubbles to the surface, which even in low percentage can crash airplanes and sink ships. Oh yeah, that's right, it can. Those of you that missed the study, I'll recap it here for you. During World War II, airplanes used to fly back and forth between the Bahamas. They used to patrol the areas off the coast of Florida as a part of naval exercises. Well, these planes didn't fly really, really high. They flew at 500 feet to 1,000 feet off the water. It just makes for more interesting flying, and you can see beneath the water a little easier and check out submarines. Plus, you have less over-the-horizon presence. You can sneak up on ships a little easier. Well, flying along at this low altitude at about between 2100 and 2400 RPM, so these old diesel engines ran, and they would be flying along, minding their own business, flaps up, clipping along at 350 miles an hour or so, and all of a sudden the engine would quit. Well, when the engine quits, if you don't have your flaps down, you're going to lose lift in a hurry, and you're going to be in the drink at about 30 seconds flat. Nothing you can do about it except try to get the flaps down, which is a little difficult to do when you don't have an engine running because you don't have hydraulic pressure to do it with. If you have electric flaps, it still takes longer than 30 seconds to get those things down to get enough lift to where you can hit the water at less than, 250 miles an hour? Right. Well, gee, why did the engines quit? Why did flight after flight in the Bermuda Triangle just all of a sudden drop into the drink. Reason? Methane. It bubbles up through the water. It mixes with the air. It's kind of heavy, so it sits there really low against the water, less than 500 feet off the water. It gets sucked into the intake, changing the stoichiometry. That's the chemistry mix of fuel and air into the engine. And the engine floods and dies. Right there, flying along, eating cookies, drinking milk, minding your own business, one hand on the stick, looking out the window, and all of a sudden, bam, zero RPM. It's rather hard to get the engine started again when it takes you by surprise like that and keep your bearings about you. So that's how planes crash. Gee, how do ships sink? I mean, come on. Well, this is how. Whenever you build a ship, you calculate the amount of water that the hull will displace when it's floating in the water. The amount that that water weighs in that space is the amount, is the limit that your ship can weigh. So in other words, if you've got a super tanker that's half a mile long and you're going to carry oil in it, oil is less dense than water, so you can put a whole lot of oil in the ship. But you can't displace any more water than the weight would be inside the hull. In other words, the weight that you displace. Unless the buoyancy of the water is changed. And it can be changed by methane bubbles coming up through the water. If that happens, and your ship is really close to the maximum draft, that means you've got about as much weight on your ship as you can carry. And you're off the coast of Florida, it's pretty hot, it's pretty humid, you have the hatches open so that you get the below decks a little ventilation, you're going down. As soon as that water comes over the side, you are going down because it's going to fill up your boat because your hatches are not battened. They're not battened because you're trying to get some air down in the lower decks. That's what happens, and that's why ships disappear without a trace. All of a sudden, they just drop out of existence. Well, that's the minor disaster. The real disaster occurs when large amounts of methane get into the atmosphere. And that's what happens when these oceans, and I'm talking about continent-sized pools of methane that are kept at liquid temperatures deep beneath the ocean. They're very dense. And they stay cold, and they stay compressed, and they stay liquid, and they stay separated from the ocean water, and they stay on the bottom. Just like the water does when you pour it into a bottle of oil. It goes right to the bottom, and it stays there. And it's not coming out unless you heat up that mixture. I don't know if you've ever done this or not, but you can buy flavored oils. You pour them into a pot. You put the pot on an open flame underneath the table, and you heat it up to where the oil is hot. And then you drop your meal into it, like, oh, you can drop chicken into it, you can drop fish into it, you can drop, you know, various vegetables into it, and the oil will cook it. And the spices in the oil make the vegetables and the meat very tasty to eat. Well, you fish this stuff out of the oil with chopsticks, and you put it in your mouth. That's not too bad when it's only 212 degrees. But as you know, oil can get very hot, 400, 450 degrees. Are you going to take a piece of floating chicken out of oil with a pair of chopsticks and pop it in your mouth at 400 degrees? Not more than once. So what they do is they pour water into the oil. It goes straight to the bottom. And it limits the temperature that the oil can get because the flame is now limited to 212 degrees. That water will boil underneath the oil. The steam will come up through the oil, heating the oil to about 210, 208 degrees Fahrenheit. That's not too bad. You can grab a piece of floating chicken out of that oil, blow on it a couple times, and pop it right in your mouth. It's a nice, hot, very clean way of eating. Well, that's exactly what happens when you put methane in the ocean. It gets cold, it stays at the bottom, it stays liquid, it minds its own business as long as that ocean is very cold and very deep. and that's where the methane stays. But if the currents change, if the Gulf Stream changes, this warm river of water that runs from north to south, that brings billions and billions of tons of plankton, which the whales feed on and other aquatic life feed on, that we then fish for, not the whales, but the other fish. We go out into the Gulf Stream and we catch these fish in nets, tuna and albacore and such, and bring it back in. Well, that's where it comes from, people. It comes from the life that lives in that Gulf Stream. And the Gulf Stream is pretty predictable. It's about 40 to 70 miles off the east coast of the United States. Somewhere in there. It varies. It can be as far as 90 miles out. But if the temperature of the oceans begin to change because they're holding on to more CO2, their acidity has changed, their salinity has changed, then the Gulf Stream begins to get pulled in further and further out to sea. As it does, it begins to influence these very deep areas. And I'm talking 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 meters deep. Very deep water. Warm water begins to stir up the cool water. And it begins to acclimate. It begins to equalize. And when it does, that methane goes from liquid state to gaseous state. And it starts coming up through the water. This is a very bad thing. If methane comes up through the water in that kind of level, that spells the end of life on a global scale. No escape. Unless something shows up like bacteria to change it back into something harmless, either alcohol or CO2 or something like that. Somehow that methane has got to be metabolized. That's dangerous. That's the chain reaction we're trying to avoid. Now, we might go along all dumb and happy and, you know, wonderfully pleased with our big V8 motor and the fact that we can accelerate from 0 to 100 miles an hour in 4.5 seconds, or the fact that we can pass anything on the highway except a gas station. We might be very happy with that. You might be happy that you have a V10 that burns more gasoline than any engine ever built. And you might not be happy with a car that only has 500 cc's that gets 75 miles per gallon. You might not be happy with an electric car that can only go 100 or 125 miles on a charge. Well, I say you need to take into consideration that you're a member of this planet. And this planet right now has almost 7 billion people on it, and every single one of them at some point in their life is going to drive a car. And we want them to be responsible about the operation of that equipment. Not that you can't have your Corvette or your Hummer, but think about it, people. Just use your brain and think about the planet. Leave those gas guzzlers on the lot where they belong and let the car companies that have been manufacturing them go broke. Finally. Let's not just keep flushing money down the rat hole, saying that, oh, gee, we have to keep these people employed. We can't let the unemployment numbers get up. Yeah, well, quit subsidizing buggy whips, and maybe we can move on to progress. And if you have any comments about that, you can always call in. Because I welcome the phone calls, toll-free worldwide, 888-228-4494. Anywhere else on planet, off planet, if you've got a cell phone tower, you can reach us, 530-776-5154. Those of you in the Phoenix market, we're so glad that you were here with us tonight. Thank you for the phone calls from there. And if you want all 3 hours of X Squared Radio, next hour we're going to be going into national health care. And don't forget to tune in next week because we have Don Schmidt, author, co-author of Witness to Roswell, the granddaddy of all UFO stories, and certainly the greatest government cover-up of them all. Don't miss it right here, X Squared Radio. Tune in and get squared. We'll be back after these messages. Oh, Welcome back, Earth Explorers, to the final hour of X Squared Radio. Our friends in Phoenix have now gone the way of the next hour of lost pets and such. And now it's just you and me, good old Internet Talk Radio audience. We're so glad that you're here with us. You have been the heart and soul of X Squared Radio for 4 years now. And we try to bring you the leading edge of the exploration of the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth, and we try to stay positive doing it, and that's what it's all about. So we are pleased that you're here, and we're pleased that I'm here. Recently, as in a few minutes ago, we finished putting the 2010 model electric truck together. You're going to like it. We're going to have pictures of it at Global Green Cars on Wednesday. It's going into paint tomorrow because we didn't want to work on it while I had a fresh paint job on it. You'll like it. It's not a really large pickup. In fact, it's called a mini truck, but it's nothing mini about it. I can tell you the cab is a lot bigger than any non-extended cab pickup truck that's out there. I enjoy driving. It's got a lot of visibility in it. It'll haul 1,000 pounds, go about 100 miles on a charge, which is more than most people commute in a day. If you're into delivery and stuff like that, we have options that can get the distance out to about 125, 130 miles in a day. The good news is that you can run it all day long with the lights running and the wipers running and the heater, air conditioning running, and you can still make all those deliveries, and you don't have to burn very much fuel. If you run on electric only, I'd say they get about 300 miles to the gallon. Yeah, 300. That's more than GM's ridiculous 230 mile per gallon claim. And you could check it out yourself. Very soon we'll be coming to a dealer near you. And if it's not near you, then we can get one close to you. And there's something that you should see if you just tuned in. It's called the Horizon Project. It's the most compelling video documentary ever done on the coming cataclysm of Earth. Don't rely on Hollywood for your future. I know the movie 2012 is coming out. I'm going to go see it myself just to see how close it is to our books. But you should go to the science. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio and get the video in your hands today. You'll like it. Also, if you happen to live in the Sedona, Arizona area, you need to click on the One Spirit Weekend banner at X Squared Radio. This one weekend will give you more tools to work through the challenges of your life than anything else you could do. It's a very uplifting, very exciting weekend, October 5th. It's affordable and it's worth it. And if you click on the banner today and get registered, they're going to give you a discount. And don't forget to tell them and your friends that you heard about it here on X Squared Radio. Now, there's one other plea that I want to make to you before we begin this hour. We're going to be talking about national health care and what it means to you, and we're going to be approaching it from a different standpoint. No, this isn't conservative talk radio. You get that all day long. You get that on all the TV channels. We're going to talk about this from a personal point of view. Put a little sense behind it, because we're trying to help you economically prepare for the coming events. Sometimes we talk about personal preparedness in terms of food storage or water storage or the taking care of your money, because it's difficult putting your money in banks. It's difficult buying stocks. It's difficult knowing what to do with your money to where you can keep it and make good use of it. But this time I want to talk to you a little bit about healthcare, a little bit about taking care of yourself, your body, because after all, that's the biological transducer that you have. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But right now, I want you to know how you can help with the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. That's right. This is the greatest geological expedition in the history of the world. Those of you that are not familiar with it, I'm going to tell you about it here in just a second. But first, let's talk to Mark from Ohio on line two. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Hello, Dr. Agnew. I have a few questions for you.
Oh, absolutely.
I remember you were talking about CO2 in the air and the fact that it might cause our oceans to become too acidic.
Right.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, it forms carbonic acid. It's a little bit like putting CO2 in Coca-Cola. You know, we compress it, we force it into solution in the bottle, and then we cap it really quick so that the CO2, which would be gaseous in normal atmospheric pressures, stays in solution in the soda. Well, it slightly acidifies that soda. And so when you pop the top on it, the gas begins to release and the CO2 bubbles up, and that's the effervescence that we feel when we drink it. CO2 can also make your blood acid level go up. If you breathe into a paper bag for 2 or 3 minutes, you will not only probably hyperventilate because you're going to be trying to get every bit of oxygen out of that air you can, but your blood acid level is going to go up. Well, the same thing happens to the saline solution of the ocean. It begins to sequester that CO2. That's what we call CO2 sequestration. And it does raise the acidity of that water. Or, shall I say, it lowers the pH.
Is there any place in our oceans now where this problem is occurring?
Well, it doesn't occur ocean-wide, and I'll tell you why. It's because of the wind as it blows across our continents. Normally, it blows from west to east, but when you get near the coasts, it has a tendency to blow in the afternoons from the ocean to the inland because of the temperature differential between land and the water. The land heats up during the day, and thus the density of the air lowers, and so the more dense, cool air out over the ocean begins to rush inland. But at night, what happens is the reverse happens, and all this pollution blows out to sea. When the dew forms over the ocean, it plunges all this right into the water. And that's where probably within 40 to 50 miles of any coast is where it's the worst. And that's why you often see these algae blooms called red tide and various algae blooms like that. They feed off that CO2 and they bloom. And when they overpopulate the water, they also take up all the oxygen in the water and they kill the fish.
So do we have dead spots in our ocean now because of this?
Yeah, I would say we do, but you know, we have rivers in the ocean, and I'm not an oceanographer in that sense, but I study it, and I can tell you that these rivers keep things stirred up pretty well. Dead zones in the press mean areas in which there's no microscopic life. It's not that the water's poisonous, it's just that there's nothing growing there. And one of the predictions that took place, I'm going to say early in the 1980s, was that we were going to see a time of unprecedented sea life prosperity. There'd be more salmon, there'd be more tuna, it would just be like unbelievable explosion of sea life. But not to get too much confidence in this, because it was actually a sign that that portion of the ocean was getting ready to die. And it's rather difficult to reseed that ocean with microscopic life that will survive.
So what you're saying is that this acidity is really a threat to the life in the ocean, or how difficult of a problem is this?
Well, as I said, there's this 350 parts per million threshold called the 350 buzz in the environmental world. Right now we're at 387, and that depends on where you take that sample too. And it depends on what time of year. During the summertime, we generate a lot more CO2 than we do in the wintertime because we're more outdoors. We're doing stuff out there. And we get temperature inversions over our cities that have a tendency to concentrate that stuff in big inverse bowls. And when those blow out to sea, we have a real problem. That being said, the ocean is the body that pays the price. If you go to the Smoky Mountains, which are on the eastern side of Tennessee, and you climb up to Mount LeConte is 6,500 feet. Just as you get there, just about 5,700, 5,800 feet, as you hike up the trail, you're going to notice a profound difference because everything is dead. All the trees look like they've been burned dry, although they're not black. They're just gray, dead. And this comes from the acid rain that's formed in Knoxville and Nashville. These cities burn coal to generate electricity. That goes up into the clouds, blows east, runs into the Smoky Mountains, and dumps on those trees in the form of rain. It killed them all. The whole forest is dead.
So just like our bodies, when our pH becomes too acidic, we lose our resistance to disease. So it's kind of like we're taking the earth and making it too acidic, and that's what's causing the real ecological crisis. It's not really global warming per se then, correct?
Yes, global warming was sort of the drumbeat. But the cause of global warming is difficult to nail down. It could be cosmic radiation. It could be the neighborhood that the solar system's in, looking at Saturn and Jupiter and Venus and Uranus. We see they're all warming. They've all had atmospheric calamities in the last 18 to 20 years. But mankind throws a little wild card in there by dumping more CO2 in the atmosphere than the planet can handle. See, we make this argument that, oh, well, when we have volcanic explosions, that puts more CO2 into the atmosphere than all the thinkings and doings of mankind. True, but it's a cataclysmic flood of CO2. And nature has a way of being able to clean up cataclysms. But when you do a chronic exposure, day after day, year after year, the planet then begins to alter. It begins to change. And now it appears, at least in the oceans and the forests, that change is becoming fatal.
Wow, that's pretty scary stuff. One last question, and I'll get off the air. I wonder if you could take some time to talk about how you feel about the probability of the coming cataclysms that you've talked about in the past. And I appreciate talking to you, and I'll see you later. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mark. That's an interesting question because, as you know, any time there is some ancient prediction or even a very popular modern prediction that something's going to happen, a la Y2K, it seems like there are entrepreneurs. I don't want to call them entrepreneurs. Let's call them opportunists. Because an entrepreneurial mind is someone that's looking for a win-win situation. The entrepreneurial mind is saying there's a need, fill a need. Sort of like, robots. Mr. Copperbottom. You see a need and fill a need. That's what an entrepreneur does. The entrepreneur wins and the person that has the need wins. But opportunism is a little bit different. Opportunism capitalizes on hype. Opportunism capitalizes on a momentary lapse of judgment, which can be created by a sociological anomaly we call contagion. I'll explain to you what that means. Contagion. It does just what it sounds. It is a contagious reaction by a group in a social society. Sort of like someone standing up in a theater and hollering fire. Well, if first two or three people are going to head for the exit, and then 200 or 300 people are going to head for the exit. Or thinking back in history, if you looked at the very careful placement of the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the crowds watching the scourging of the Christ, standing up and yelling, crucify him, crucify him. Well, that just caused contagion and the whole group gets into it. A few well-placed opportunists can take advantage. And that's what we see pretty much with this 2012 cataclysm thing. We do have predictions left for us by the Mayans. One has to wonder, why would the Mayan society go through all the trouble, all the wars and all the gross national products spent, all the advanced engineering to build something that they would not benefit from, to build something that only is pointing at our day, some 2,500 years in the future of them. How motivated would we be if our president came out and said, I want to spend 25% of the gross national product on building an edifice for those people that are going to come along in the year 4045? Yeah, that's about the reaction you would get. Okay, when is the election coming up? I just want to make a note of it on my calendar. Right. Nobody is going to jump up and do that. And so one has to wonder why one society, namely the Mayans, would create this incredible, complex, well-documented, generation after generation, believed in, fortified, supported, and invested in historical, futuristic look that some cyclic event, some cataclysmic event, is going to occur December 21st, 2012. Oh, I forgot, they're not the only society that did that. There are other societies that invested huge amounts of their capital, not one generation, 40, 50, 80 generations, to make sure we, here, in December of 2012, we're aware something mighty powerful is about to happen. Now, the big question is, what is the something? Is the something a moment of great enlightenment, a great awakening, great jump in consciousness, a surge forward in the conscious evolution of the human race? Or is it the alignment of the planet with a terrible rift in the Milky Way, the combination of gravity from which can draw a solar flare across the very crust of the Earth, delivering a conflagration of biblical proportions? Are we talking 300-mile-an-hour winds from which we must build a bunker immediately? Or are we talking a dimensional shift that only those at a higher vibrational level are going to be able to sense and even participate in, something nigh unto a taking up or a rapturing of the people on the earth, that suddenly pilots and taxi cab drivers and priests and Minute Mart attendants are going to disappear, leaving open drawers of cash and idling cars in the middle of the freeway? Is this going to happen? Well, one could say, you know what, it's just so much Y2K hype. However, we're talking about entrepreneurs and we're talking about opportunists. Were the Mayans opportunists? I don't think so. They spent their money or their time or their labor or their manpower or their wealth in trying to leave us a message. They won because they felt great fulfillment in building these cities, in proving to us that they had great knowledge of astronomy and cosmology, that they could not only see Earth as the third planet from the sun, they could see Earth as the sixth planet from the outside, or in some cases, the ninth planet from the outside. At one time, 12 planets, if you want to go back and look at the Babylonian cylinders. Or if you want to take Zachariah Sitchin's work and his translation of Sumerian texts into modern language. Something is definitely going on here. What shall we be ready for? That's the main question. The answer is, you should be ready for anything. Should you build a bunker? Should you get a 2-year supply of food together? Should you listen to prophets and prognosticators? Should you read ancient history and different soothsayers from different ages? These are the most powerful questions of our age. These are the undercurrents that cause the anxieties of our society. In my day, when I was a young boy, It was the advent of nuclear war. We were testing weapons literally all over the planet. We were blowing the heck out of our own crust off of Los Alamos and out there at Groom's Lake. We were doing atmospheric tests. I watched one when I was a kid, a very high-level atmospheric test with a ballistic weapon. Terrifying, absolutely terrifying. In California, I remember going through drills, not for tornadoes, but for nuclear war. This was a source of anxiety for our society. This was the source of tension for mothers everywhere as their kids went to school. Where would my kids be when the alarm went off? We were in the middle of a Cold War that delivered an undercurrent of tension to our society that was difficult to overcome. It was difficult to assimilate. It was difficult to think of the future of prosperity, and even peace was beyond imagination. Now, as the clock is ticking and it's 2009, soon to be the winter of, 3 years and counting, to the great cataclysm predicted of old, to the cosmic, cosmological Cold War, as it were, here we come, ready or not. My gosh, how do we get ready? Do I learn to meditate? Do I learn to sing? Do I live as though I was dying? Do I climb every mountain, learn scuba, teach myself the guitar, and love my kids as hard as I can every day? Answer? All of the above. All of the above without the tension. Because we're not the only ones going through this. We're not the only race. There are other sentient races on this planet, and they're going to go through it with us. And there's more. The planet itself is going to go through it. The planet Earth, the rock, which we think is unconscious, which has no feeling and no life, and yet may very well be alive with a subtle heartbeat and a generous consciousness that fills us all and attracts us and keeps us from blowing the whole thing up. Maybe, just maybe, we can tie the two together. Maybe there's time. As we know the precipice is coming, because we've been warned, because the word is out, because there are programs like this one, where you can think about it, and you can talk about it, and you can listen about it, and you can learn, and you can read, and we encourage you to do all of those. But the big question is, how do you feel? Because in the end, none of us are going to get out of it alive anyway. That's not the point. We are immortal beings having a mortal experience. Neither you nor I can die. We simply move from mortal to immortal and back again, over and over again, raising our wisdom, improving our condition, changing our age, developing away from the bad and toward the good. Well, what's good, what's bad? We are learning that the energy of love is different than the energy of hatred. We are learning that there are leaders that can take control of the media. They can take control of huge budgets, and they can try to force society one way or the other with various incentives and penalties and laws and restrictions. But in the end, we are a free people, and we can dream what we want to dream. And when we dream, we change the universe, because we are the creators. Our consciousness is part of that energy. Do you really think the talking heads in Washington run this country? I don't think so. you run the country. You run the country every time you go to the mall or don't go to the mall. You run the country every time you jump in that automobile and turn the key with nowhere to go. You run the country by the dollars that you spend, by the children that you have and you love, by the houses that you buy, by the neighborhoods that you like, by the schools and the textbooks that you support. You run the country. And the idea is to do it in a free manner. The idea is to take into consideration that there were ancient civilizations before you that left you a message. And if you really want to know the importance of that, you really want it to hit home, I'm going to tell you something. When you answer the question, who built those pyramids? Who built those temples down there in South America? Who made the roads so straight? Why did they take such engineering legacies and lay them down in such a way that we, a modern, intelligent people, capable of doing anything, would stand in awe and in marvel, that we would be blown away by the technology that you apparently applied in building these edifices? The reason is because you built them. You were there. The reason you built them is so that you would remember when you got here, that you would have something on the planet so amazing, so inexplicable, that would strike such awe in you, such great respect in you, that you would ask the question, why were these built? Who built these? And in meditation, the answer would come to you, I get it. I get it. I don't know how to put it into words, but I get it. And I'm concerned about it. I'm concerned in a way that makes me love a little bit harder. I'm concerned in a way that makes me not take revenge or be jealous or curse another nation or another race. That we learn to live together with our Earth. And by the way, those of you, us, that came from the stars most recently, maybe not involved in that ancient building, but you know why it was built. The reason you're here is because you want to participate. You reserved a space, and the Earth became capable of supporting us. Almost 7 billion strong, more than have ever lived on the Earth before. The reason is because we all wanted to be here. We all wanted to participate. And it's not just a rock floating through space. It's a living, conscious being who is about to go through the most amazing evolution. And we are here, alive, getting to go through that at the same time. One might have asked the question sometime in your life, I think I was born at the wrong time. I think I should have been born in the 50s. I think I should have been born during the 1800s. I wanted to be a cowboy. I think I should have been born in the 1700s. I wanted to see great nations declare their freedom. I wanted to be born during the times of Genghis Khan or Buddha or Jesus. You were. You were. And you gained that experience and you brought it forward with you. But the greatest time of all, the greatest time of all, the time to which all the prophets, every scientist, every writer, every dreamer of future look to, is right now. Now is the time when all the prophets made their predictions. Now is the time when Isaiah and Enoch and Jesus himself spoke that we must take great care in how we develop ourselves and how we care for our planet and care for each other. This is the time. It wasn't the 1700s. It wasn't the 1800s. It was right now at the end of the age, the end of the Suntella Aeon, December 21st, 2012. Well known, well looked at, well measured by instruments like the Antikytheria and like the pyramids in Egypt and like the great cities of Teotihuacan and Chichen Itza and Tula, they all looked to this day. And guess what? You are alive in it. You are alive in it. You're not a spectator. You're participating in it. You are the envy of all ages and all times and all civilizations in the entire universe. Don't squander it. Give us a call, 888-228-4494. Anywhere else, on planet, off planet, anything I've said has struck a chord with you. 530-776-5154. We are coming to you live on the BBS Radio Network, and we are rebroadcast to the Conscious Media Network, and we are now live on KFNX 1100 for the first 2 hours of this program. If you're tuning in, you're getting squared. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Make me a witness. Take me out of darkness, out of doubt. I won't weigh you down with good intention. We'll make fire.
Give us a call, toll-free, 888-228-4494, anywhere on planet or off planet. If you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us, 530-776-5154, Sarah McLaughlin, witness. I wanted to say a few words about national health care. So much has been said about it lately. I think if you think about the economics of it, you will agree. Stay healthy. Save your money. Put some in the bank and get a yearly checkup. Your teeth cleaned once a year. And be careful. Or, sit home with the sniffles and forget about going to the doctor on the little stuff. You won't spend more than $200 a year on health care costs anyway for the first 40 years of your life. Buy your own medicine and leave the insurance alone. It's a racket. Enough said? Okay, that's it for insurance. National health care is a big scam. They just want more of your money, 14% of the economy, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now, one more thing we could do to help the planet and help the country and your own wallet. Are you ready? It's not complicated. Drive the speed limit. Yeah, I know. I have my share of tickets, too. But here's the bottom line. Actually, there are four bottom lines. I'm going to give them all to you right now. I think you will agree with them. Serious stuff. Number one bottom line. When you speed, even if it's with the flow of traffic, you're going to get a ticket. That will cost you about $120 in the short term, and there's more to this. The patrolman, I forgot to tell you, yeah. He's not fighting crime. You know this, don't you? He's revenuing, okay? He isn't fighting crime. He's sitting out there in the shadows, behind the bushes, behind the sign, up on the backside of the on-ramp. I've seen it all, and the worst, most despicable, most disrespectful is an unmarked car. If you want to put the revenuers out of business, then drive the speed limit for 1 year. I promise they will go away. And your tax bill will go down. Or at least it won't increase. The thousands and thousands of revenuers that are out there on the side of the road are there for only one reason. They are not there to keep the highways safe. The highways are much safer without them there. They're there to get money. Yours. They can't tax it out of your houses, so they're going to take it out of your wallet when you drive. That's the number one bottom line. Number two, after you get the ticket, then your insurance company will find out, and this is the other savings. You can't drive without insurance, and they know it. They don't care if you have accidents or not. If you speed, your insurance will cost more. Period. Do you have $3,000 a year for insurance? Did you know the average family of four with two driving teenagers and one car with full coverage? Do you know what they will spend? And that's the only new car out of the four people, they will pay $6,200 a year in auto insurance. That's more than most teenagers make working in a year. That's the average, and that is a ripoff. And there's nothing you can do about it except drive the speed limit. You drive the speed limit, and you will drive those costs down. That's the number two bottom line. There's two more. That's right. Two more savings I'm about to give you. Number three, you will use less fuel when you drive the speed limit. You see, when you push air, you waste fuel. Most cars are as aerodynamic as a refrigerator. The amount of horsepower it takes to push a car 75 miles an hour is four times what is required to push the same car on the same road 50 miles an hour. That's right. And if you own a diesel, like a Dodge 5.9 or the Ford or the Duramax, stay under 2,000 RPM or you will pay about $5,000 a year for fuel. Have you got the money to throw away? And by the way, I forgot to tell you this. Fuel prices are going to double in 12 months. Yeah. Katrina or not, hurricane or not, they're going to increase. I got the inside track from a billionaire myself. He told me face-to-face in China. You were looking at $4 a gallon, $5 a gallon, and maybe even $6 a gallon gasoline. It's coming, people. Face it. So drive the speed limit. And number four, there's a fourth savings at driving the speed limit. Greenhouse gases are pushing the edge of criticality. Now, I know you live in a progressive, modern neighborhood. People drive new cars and have great emission controls. So you think you're not to blame. You think that India and China are the real polluters. Wrong. They use public transportation, and they drive low-powered vehicles. Low-powered. I mean 500cc minivans. When have you ever had a vehicle that had 500cc's in it or 600cc's in it? That's the size of an old motorcycle by our standards. And their motorcycles usually have about 90cc's or 50cc's, and millions upon millions of them ride electric bikes and cars, or they ride public buses. That's right. Will you forget about horsepower for a moment and start thinking about the planet? Will you stop thinking about a car that goes 0 to 104.5 seconds? Will you stop thinking about that and start thinking about the planet and start thinking about your pocketbook? If you drive the speed limit, you'll save $1,000 a year in gasoline, $200 a year in tickets, and $1,000 a year in insurance. And that's money you can spend the way you want to. Now, if I was going to give you a $2,500 a year raise, you'd be jumping up and down, doing cartwheels, and saying, oh my gosh, I'm heading for the mall. I just gave you a $2,500 a year raise. Now, don't make me fire you so that you don't realize you just lost the best job you're ever going to have. Next week on X Squared Radio, we have Don Schmidt. He is the co-author of a book called Witness to Roswell, Unmasking the Government's Biggest Cover-Up. This book has been written, and then it was rewritten. Many, many more pages, lots more pictures, witness testimony added to it. Jesse Marcel, who is the descendant of one of the main characters in this book, is going to be speaking at the Burlington UFO Vortex Conference in Burlington, Wisconsin. If you want to be part of it, you want to go there, you want to listen to great speakers like Stanton Friedman, Jesse Marcel, me, then you can come and enjoy it. I promise you're going to enjoy it. Mary Sutherland is a great hostess. She's been in this business since the very beginning, and if you'll go back, way back in the archives of X Squared Radio, you'll see it was Mary Sutherland. Mary Sutherland that gave me my first interview on talk radio. And we want to repay the favor. So let's go up there in mass, people. I want thousands of people at this conference. All right? I will see you there. And I will see you next week. Right here on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.
Good evening, and welcome to Bloggin' Broadcasting Service. This is Nevin Campanella, introducing you to a new dimension in radio talk show. BBS is the frontline reporting service of the extraordinary and sometimes cataclysmic events which affect our lives. Listen and become aware of the knowledge that has been hidden from your view.